says we say good morning to Lucette King. Good morning, Lucette.
Good morning, Ivy. Good morning to our listeners as usual. As a reminder, this program, Global Highlights with Lucette King, was launched on January 16, 2010, days after the January 12th earthquake that left Haiti in a more impoverished state than it was before. The effect of this earthquake that measured some 7 points on the Richter scale is to have left about 230,000 dead in the capital, Port-au-Prince. 8 months later, the 1.3 million left alive are still living in about 1,300 camps and among some of 90% of the 33 million cubic yards of debris that fell from fallen buildings. In addition, there might be about 300,000 living with injuries. Moreover, there appears to be no end to chaos, even after, as some claim, no less than $98.5 million have already been spent to remove the rubble alone. Despite the fact that these figures vary from one report to the next, the impact is still tremendous and oftentimes beyond the scope of our imagination. And so to give us a sense of the situation on the ground in Haiti is Mr. Edward Eddie Richardson, who visited about 2 weeks ago. Good morning, Teacher
Good
Eddie.
Good morning to you, Lizette, and
Good
to
morning.
Your audience.
Thank you. Eddie, you hail from Hopewell, the Mariacourt Valley.
That's
and
right.
You left some years ago. You left the teaching profession to go to England, where you became a nurse. However, you are now a missionary and evangelist, and it is in this capacity that you visited Haiti recently. So
That's
tell
right.
us what you did between leaving home in St. Vincent and in Bermuda now. What did you do? What were your activities?
Yes, quite a story. I have to admit I left St. Vincent because as a young man I had a desire to travel and to get out. Nursing was not necessarily my choice profession. I always dreamed of being a dentist. However, I had the opportunity. I went away, studied psychiatric nursing. I then went on. I did general nursing and accepted a position in Bermuda. That was the beginning of quite a few good things for me in that the psychiatric services were just being really expanding in Bermuda, and I had the opportunity for further training. I did health service administration through the Canadian Hospital Association and functioned in various capacities in Bermuda, right up to assistant director of nursing. And finally, I headed up the alcohol and drug treatment program for Bermuda before resigning to go full-time in the Lord's work. And that's where I am just now. But I think that all the preparation that I did then in the secular sense serves well in the church ministries that I'm involved in as I utilize them from day to day as I go around different countries of the world.
What inspired you to make this trip to Haiti of all places?
Well, I have always been mission-focused, and I've done several trips to Africa and throughout, especially the English-speaking Caribbean and parts of South America. The churches that I'm affiliated with have a strong mission focus, and as the person who heads up the what we call the Bermuda Mission Trust, after the earthquake, we collected quite a bit of funds for Haiti, but it was felt that it would be good for someone to go and have a hands-on view of what is happening there. And so I took a group of, there were four of us from Bermuda, and we had a guide, as it were, from who was based in Miami and also a Haitian. And we had a very profitable week visiting Haiti. So we were motivated by taking aid and also trying to formulate bridges for assistance in the future.
What kind of aid you took?
Well, we took money, literally. There were bits and pieces of clothing, but we didn't want to be held up with anything that would prevent us from getting through customs, immigration, and so forth easily. So we did take money. I must say that we had made contacts before, so we knew very much one or two of the agencies that we were going to be visiting with and share some financial assistance. but it was not primarily the handing out of money as much as looking to see what is there and what we are willing to work with to help the people of Haiti in the future.
Good. You know, we just heard of some figures in terms of the debris, how many people dead, how many people are still living, and some of them in deplorable conditions. So help us understand what these figures mean. Try take us through a journey of your own perception. You might talk about the sight, the smell, the hearing, touch, maybe the taste. Take us all through all the senses.
Well, like the quotation says, the half has not been told, because I read and I heard a lot in the media about Haiti, but visiting there is another story, and you see the reality, the devastation that occurred. You see the people, and it is really touching, because here we are in, well, it's October now. I was there last month, the latter part of last month, and what you see, you would think at times that the earthquake had just occurred. There are many buildings that you see in ruin, and in fact, we've been told reliably by individuals, there are still bodies underneath, entombed under some of these buildings, because they're still, they still have not been able to access them. I mean, I would hasten to say, one has to look at this thing in the light of Haiti. Haiti is not like many of the other countries, and I myself, I question, how could it possibly be? What happened to the heavy equipment that would lift these concrete slabs and so forth? And I'm not sure that I'm in a position to answer why much of that has not happened. But I can tell you categorically, I've witnessed individuals with a simple sledgehammer just beating away at concrete, still now trying to break up some of this to clear the debris, maybe to get at the remains, or literally just to clear things to continue with life. But in the midst of all of that, what is amazing, you see life going on. It is very common to see right next to such utter destruction, someone would set up a stall and they're selling food or selling little bits and pieces of stuff to make a living. And the people, of course, many of them flock into Port-au-Prince, as you mentioned before. It's the center of everything. And any hour of the day and night, you see teeming thousands of people. And you really wonder about that, because when you look at the life that the people live there, many of them, what else is there to do? Because the 10 cities, as they're called, they exist with very minimal facilities. My own guess is that many of these people, they stay on the streets for as long as they could. Many of them get involved in crime, sadly enough. But then when they're ready to sleep, they go to the tents, I would imagine, or wherever they can find some rest. But the situation is, it is really desperate. It is terrible at the moment.
So what's the smell like?
Okay, I must say this much, and if my grandchildren are listening, I know they would laugh. Grandpa doesn't smell too well, and maybe that's a blessing. Having said that, in all honesty, at this point in time, I cannot say that I identified any smell that I can link with rotten bodies or anything like that. However, it is true that the hygiene in general is such that there is a residual something there. I wouldn't necessarily say from dead bodies, but some of the Haitians I've spoken to, they tell you it's just more of the same. Yes, there is the destruction and the devastation, but many of the slum areas, that's what many Haitians have been accustomed to. So, you know, one has to look at this in the light of the realities of Haiti.
I read some time ago a psychotherapist went down there, and she was literally walking around and touching people and, you know, counseling them on the spot. With your background, did you see that happening anywhere?
Well, not only did I see it, but I had the opportunity to do some of that. In fact, anyone with any background in counseling, and that can be a professional psychologist or psychiatrist, it could be a psychiatric nurse, anyone with counseling skills, and pastors and so forth, religious leaders, are playing a vital role from that point of view. You cannot but lend support there. Quite often it's not necessarily a matter of telling people what to do, but listening to people, their pains, the agony, the trials and the testings that they're going through, and being able to say, well, look, I'm here for you. I might not be able to do an awful lot, but I want you to know I'm listening. People want that. People want to know that others care. And I know from the religious standpoint, I really appeal to religions or churches to think of this very, very seriously. It's not just a matter of staying in our ivory palaces or in our beautifully decorated and furnished churches, but we need to reach out to these people. Because if we look at the Bible and what it teaches, and I have to say without apology, I do believe in what the Bible teaches. The Bible speaks about religion and what it's really all about. It says that true religion is really reaching out to those in need. We can say what we like about our, as I say, our God talk, but unless that hits, the rubber hits the road, and we are reaching out to people who are in need, I don't think the Lord is well pleased with us. The orphans, the widows, those who are suffering, as you mentioned, there are thousands of people just now who are injured. Many of them are still in many of these clinics seeking help. Help that sometimes it's not available, but people do the best with what they have. And we must impact on those people. It's not good enough, I think, for us to stand aside and to say, well, Haiti is a wicked place and they deserve it. I've heard that statement. I cannot be an arbiter with that, because I know that each and every one of us stand before God. We are sinners. If you believe in that, I do believe. And we need God's love and God's care and God's compassion. And there are times with my puny mind, I tend to believe that things happen because God believes that there are some good people like us, if I could put good in quotation marks, who would minister to those needs. So we must rise up and respond to the needs as they are in Haiti and other places.
I'm getting a sense that the churches don't have to take something in their hands materially, but they ought to go there and mix with the people. Am I correct?
I believe that that's a big part of it. I can give you my own opinion. I don't think it is the best thing, as I've experienced myself over the last few weeks in Haiti, to just go and pass out some U.S. dollars to people. That's good in a way. But we try to get people, if you teach a man to fish, you're likely to feed him for the next few days or months or years, and not just give him a fish, if you can see the analogy that I'm drawing. And the churches and others do have a responsibility, and even now they're still sending aid in. It's my understanding that there are thousands upon thousands of tons of aid that are in Haiti untouched even now, and I can't get into the whatever the red tape might be, but the fact is there is aid there, and some Haitians will tell you that they are living better today than they did before the earthquake. Hard to imagine, but that's what I was told. The fact of the matter is trying to get people to a stage where they have a sense of pride in themselves, they want to do something for themselves, and they can carry their country forward, because from what I've seen, Haiti is a rich country, rich in culture and art. They're very talented people. But sadly enough, for whatever reason, the country is in the state that it is. And this has been compounded, of course, by the massive earthquake that they've had.
You said they have to work with what they have. And I'm sure you were referring to the health facilities. What's that like?
Well, not very good. And I say not very good when I compare it with Bermuda or most of the Caribbean countries and United States and so forth. There are many clinics where you go and you hear stories that they haven't got medicines, they haven't got the resources to do diagnostic procedures and so forth. Their nurses and the doctors local people I'm talking about at this time, who have not been paid. Now, I'm not sitting here judging anybody. I'm just mentioning some of the facts that I've met there. And quite often, sadly enough, you still find the situation where it depends on who you are and who you know as to whether you will get care. I'll tell you one of the very terrible stories that we were told, and this happens to be factual. There were times after the earthquake when, for example, a mother and father might have suffered or died, and a child, an infant, might have been left behind. That infant might have been placed aside and literally left to die. I'm not saying it happened in every case, but we've met two cases where that has been the case. And the rationale was, well, what's the point of trying to so-called waste resources on this infant when there's nobody to take care of it? That child, these two children that I know of, were taken by someone to an orphanage where they're doing extremely well. So here you see the whole village, the whole community being involved, people who care enough to do something. So it's not just the so-called professionals, wonderful though they are and needed they are, but everyone has to work together if Haiti, in the health arena, in education, in other areas, is going to get to a place where it's functioning in a much better manner.
With all of that, you have gang-related crimes. Apparently, the gangsters have taken a hold on the camps. And you mentioned it briefly. What are some of the stories with that, especially with rape?
Well, of course, I cannot endorse any behavior like that. But visiting there, you can almost see why that is happening. When you visit these places and you see these tents, I mean, literally, to look at it is unbelievable. You see a tent pitched in Bermuda, and you know somebody is having some recreation. You know, they've gone to the beach, and they're camping overnight. It's not like that. This is for real. People live there with families, sometimes two, three children or more, with mother and father. There might be extended members of family. And around them, with sometimes a matter of a foot, if that much, of a so-called boundary between these tents. These people live, and these tents might cover acres of land. There isn't sufficient lighting in the evening. Many people are there, they're not working. So you have males and females, and many women are taken advantage of. Many females are taken advantage of, and don't fool yourself. It happens with males as well. So there's a lot of rape, there's incest, and all of that. And I hasten to say, it exists in the wider community, in even our sophisticated communities, but it is surely exacerbated in a place like Haiti under the conditions that they're living in. And regarding crime in general, I had one or two personal experiences with that where, for example, you might push your hand in your pocket to give something to somebody, and a caring Haitian would come up and say, "Don't you ever do that again." Why? Simply because someone sees you giving money to somebody, they assume you're a stranger, or literally you've got money. You can literally be ambushed or something like that. And one has to be very astute, because it's a situation at times where you call it like dog eat dog. You've got something, I have nothing, I want it, so I'm going to take it. And many people will tell you, they judge that on what does it matter if I get caught. Quite often, it's more merciful to be in the hands of the police, because there are some street laws there as well, where if you do something that's wrong, the people take their own justice, and I don't need to tell you what can happen. So it's a very, very sad situation, and God alone knows when this will come to an end. But we cannot sit back. We cannot take it lightly. We've got to impact on that in whatever way the Lord and our consciences would allow us to do.
I take it most of your experience, is about staying in Port-au-Prince. But obviously, there has to be some good things there. Can you share some of that? Were you able to go out of Port-au-Prince or even from within Port-au-Prince? What are some of the good stories?
Well, in fact, I've got some news for you. Believe it or not, the bulk of our time was spent outside of Port-au-Prince, and we were thankful for that. We our base was in Port-au-Prince, but in fact we journeyed several hundred miles, and believe you me, that was really something. We went to the north to Capetian, which I understand was, if I'm not mistaken, the original capital, or it's one of the larger cities right to the north. We also went across the border to the Dominican Republic, because there are some Haitians who are living there. They went there to work in the cane fields and so forth, maybe never went back to Haiti, but they're involved in church ministries there. And our hope was that we would try to empower some of these people to go back and to help their own people in Haiti. And that's quite a story in itself. Also, we went to the northwest. And in all of those situations, we met with and talked with people who are very much involved. While they might not have been impacted directly by the earthquake, many of the people, especially orphans, one of our main focuses was on the orphans. And orphanages outside of Port-au-Prince have been inundated with children, because they had a measure of safety and they had some infrastructure that was more geared towards helping these people. So they were impacted, of course. And lots of the people there, they are struggling too. But nevertheless, we were able to get a good view as to what is happening outside. The people, of course, there's agriculture. But then again, you see some things there that make you wonder, how could one country go through so much? Let me give you an example. Being from the Caribbean myself, I saw so many people cutting down the trees so that they can burn the wood for coal. You know what I'm talking about, Caribbean mm-hmm. folk.
Yes.
And there are places where, in fact, there are literally no trees, you know, because it's a means whereby people would, you know, get something to sell. But be that as it may, it impacts, you know, there's a lot of erosion in the sand, the rocks from the land and so forth, and the people generally suffer. I cannot venture to talk about what laws they do have and what laws of police, but this is happening there. And the whole gamut, you know, it's like a cycle. One thing impacts on the other. The things that the people have that can potentially be good, they seem not to be well enough managed so that all the people benefit. But when you see the art and so forth of the people, they have fantastic artists. They have people with their sculpture and so forth who do great work, and some of this is exported. They're known for that. They're skilled people in many cases, but sadly enough, something is not happening. And that's where we get concerned. So all of Haiti, I mean, is in a state. I'm positive that they're the rich and the famous there too. But nevertheless, we are talking about the mass of the people, the majority of the people. They're really in a state where so much is needed.
You would not know this, but for information, Ambassador Ramdin, who is an official of the Organization of American States, made an appeal last week for backpacks, you call it, for the kids. We didn't talk about the children in school. What is that like?
Okay. Now, again, one might accuse me of being biased, but much of what I'm sharing comes from the perspective that I went there from the church point of view, the missions or religious point of view. And what I believe is a fact, and anybody can research this on the internet, the majority of schools, and if I might dare say, the majority of better schools are private, and private meaning being run by either religious bodies or churches. Now, that's very interesting. And they rely on the missionaries, the teachers, and so forth, and the support that they might get from abroad for these schools to be functioning. Many children are not in school, of course, partly because of the earthquake, but I think it doesn't take a wise kid to see a lot of that existed even before because of certain conditions. So you find a lot of people, a lot of young people on the streets. Nevertheless, it is known that they are very intelligent Haitians like they're intelligent Vincentians or Jamaicans or Bermudians. A lot has to do with opportunity. And part of what we went to do is to look at some of this and see how could one impact so that children are better educated, so that schools are built, so that teachers are paid or supplied to meet these needs. You'd have to speak to somebody else from the government's stance on education and schools. But some of the stories that I've heard, it really makes me wonder. And one talks about not having enough in the budget to provide schools, public schools, and so forth. I cannot address that, but I know for a fact that the majority of schools are from fledgling groups who are doing a wonderful work with what they have, but so much more is needed. The children need to be fed and cared for from a health point of view, but they need to be educated as well.
Randy?
This is Global Highlights with Lucette King. She's in Washington, D.C. I'm Randy D. We're having a conversation with Eddie Richardson, a Bermuda-based Vincentian missionary and evangelist who recently visited Haiti as part of his missionary work. Eddie, good morning. And now that you've had the opportunity to assess the situation for yourself, what next steps are you and your church planning?
Okay. Thanks for asking that, and it's good talking with you, brother. In fact, our hope, by the way, I'm affiliated with the Christian Brethren Assemblies. I was with them in the Caribbean in St. Vincent and here in Bermuda. But our main, outside of the aid that we have already sent and we hope to continue to send, what we are really focusing on is the orphanages. We see a lot of potential in the young people, the children. They're wonderful kids. And if they're well taken care of, I have no doubt that they in turn would impact on their country, Haiti. So we want to assist in building some of the structures that are necessary to house and to take care of these children. We also want to look at housing for some of the people. Now, when you talk about something like $2,000 or $3,000, you'd be surprised what that can do for a Haitian family. And we have seen some buildings, very simple buildings, but in the context of much of Haiti, they would be considered extremely substantial. And we want to assist some of the groups or agencies working in Haiti to fund the building of some of these structures. But we believe that it should not be just a gift. These people must invest, no matter how small, in some of this, and as they pay back that loan that we might be able to make available to them, that money goes back in to help somebody else. So those are the two main areas that we, from my missionary point of view, are hoping to do in the future for Haiti.
Randy, you finish?
Yeah, you go ahead.
You know, I am so delighted that you mentioned that. It's about micro-lending. Which is
exactly,
a big
that's
business,
what it's called.
And I'm actually very grateful. We're going to have a discussion on that some time ago. It's an investment that ordinary people can make.
That's right.
Right. Tell me, as a missionary, Eddie, what is your position? And I can't let you go without asking you this question.
Wow, what are you coming with now?
Just listen. Tighten the belt. You know, looking at Haiti with all the disasters and everything else, and recently that freak storm that killed about 5 people,
yes.
You know, not surprising. Some people say this is Haiti's payback,
wow.
Punishment from God because of their beliefs and practices in voodoo. What is your position?
Okay. Well, I hope I don't get ostracized by anybody for saying this, but as you ask, this is my own view. And I believe that all men, when I say men, I mean mankind, all men have, mankind has transgressed before God. And we might use our yardstick to judge another person, another city, another nation. But I believe God is the arbiter in the end. And we have seen God move in judgment on people throughout history, whether it was in Egypt or in Babylon, wherever. And the fact that we in much of the Caribbean and United States, England, what have you, might not have had a lot of tragedies like these. We cannot go away thinking that we are better than anybody else. Now, it is a fact, for example, this is nothing to hide, it's well documented. One of, if not the main religions, and remember I said religions, in Haiti happens to be voodoo. It's a religion, it's well accepted there. I'm not necessarily endorsing it, I don't believe that. I'm a Christian, but nevertheless, one has to understand that's the people's belief. Now, many people have made a statement that that's the reason why Haiti is going through all of that. I'm not in a position to say that. I must say this much, though, what I've seen with my own eyes, and I've seen it in parts of Africa. People have a yearning for something. They reach out for something. And there are those who reach out, because it's the religion of the masses, to voodoo. But I've seen those people, when they're presented with the truth of God's word, respond in a wonderful way. And the word of God has something to say about that. Where sin abounded, God's grace does much more abound. And I think as Christians, we need to be careful that we don't just stand on a wall and throw darts, but we seek to impact on people as we believe and let the Spirit of God do his work. And that's my contribution to that, not one necessarily of judgment, but to reach out in compassion.
But you said the main religion is voodoo, suggesting that there are other religions.
Oh, yes, of course. There's. Let me say in the broad sense, as I was told, people said, generally speaking, and I hope people understand, I don't want to be branded as spreading what have you. People said, generally, you have three religions in a broad sense. You've got the Roman Catholics, you've got the Baptists, and you've got voodoo, not necessarily in that order. But when they say Baptist, they're talking generally about almost all the evangelicals put together. But that's easily recognized. They call a lot of people Baptists who in some other communities might not be regarded as such, but that's what they look at. But intermingled in all of those, you have those traditional practices of the people. You'd hear a so-called Christian telling you, well, my parents or my mother, father was sick. I prayed to the Lord. Nothing's happening. So I took my family to the witch doctor. And these are things that you still have to deal with there. And one needs to understand that in that context. And religion is there. Religion abounds in Haiti. And religion, please bear in mind, is what it is. And from the word of God, as I said, true religion is really ministering to those in need. True religion, from the Christian standpoint, is loving God and loving your neighbor as yourself. True religion calls for sacrifice. It calls for giving. It does not necessarily seek and appreciate all the goodness here and now. There are many Christians who never enjoy that now, but we have a hope in something that is to come, and our faith is based in God. But God would have us to minister to our neighbors, to those who we don't even like, or those who don't even think the way that we think. But God is glorified as a result.
This is a cheeky question. Were you able to convert anybody while you were there?
Well, I'm not ashamed to answer that, because I am not in the business of converting. God does that. But I know what you mean. I was able to minister. We didn't go necessarily to preach, but the opportunity was there, and the response was extremely good. We prayed with people who reached out for God's forgiveness and cleansing, and God has promised that those who call upon him would be forgiven. So I believe God has used me and others to do a work in that area.
Thank you very much, Eddie. Any last words?
Well, I can't go without saying hello to all my fellow Vincentians. I'm a Vinci by heart, and I love you dearly, and I just want to encourage you, as the Lord prospers you, remember those in need. Haiti is our neighbor, and we cannot ignore them. We have to love them for Christ's sake. And God bless you all.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Randy.
Thank you, Lucette. Thank you, Eddie. Great hearing from you, man. Great job. Thank you. Global Highlights every Saturday morning, 5 to 9. Lucette King, live from Washington, D.C. Special guest this morning, Eddie Richardson. And Eddie's a Bermuda-based Vincentian missionary and evangelist. Just visited Haiti. Thanks, Lucette. Thank you,
bye.
Eddie.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.